I'm Chase Clements, and this is the Support Ops Hangout. This is a show that helps you deliver a better support experience to your customers. Now, we've got some of the best support pros in the business in our crew. Let's go ahead and meet them before we dive into this week's topic. First up, Carolyn's gone. She'll be back next week. Something about, I don't know, something important. So, I mean, it's got to be something important not to hang out with us. We'll say that. next up, Jeff Vincent from Wistia. How are you?
I'm good. I'm glad to be here.
And then last but certainly not least, Chase Livingston, the other great Chase from Automatic. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Glad to be here.
Awesome. I should point out, too, for all of you that came and saw the live show at SupConf in New York City a couple of weeks ago, thanks for doing that. Thanks for not throwing things at us. I saw some fruit and things in the audience. I'm glad you refrained, which was really nice. But yeah, it was fun. Lots of people said they enjoyed it. And I think, no promises, but I think we might get invited back to the next one. So we'll try to be on our best behavior and make that happen. All right, this episode, this is part two of the first book that we're looking at, Creativity Inc. By Ed Catmull. For those of you that didn't listen to the last episode or haven't heard of him before, he's the president of Pixar Animation and Disney Animation way back in the day. He actually co-founded Pixar with Steve Jobs and John Lasseter. Yeah, I should point out, too, if you haven't listened to last week's or the last episode, it would probably be beneficial, I think. I mean, we talked about some of the core stuff for the book, so you might want to go back and check that one out. For this one, the first one I want to dive into, one of the kind of like core parts, as Jeff put it earlier, was the idea that managers are there for empowerment. One of the things that kind of really stood out to me is this a line in there where Ed says, "What's the point of hiring smart people if you don't empower them to fix what's broken? And it's not the manager's job to prevent risk. It's the manager's job to make it safe to take them." So yeah, Jeff, let's start with you over at Wistia on this one. That idea of, you know, you're hiring smart people, you're probably paying them really well, trusting their judgment. Why do you think it's so hard to kind of like turn them loose and let them do their job?
It's so hard. Well, certainly part of it is that a lot of us who are working in these roles in SaaS companies have never done this before. We've never been managers before, and we don't have much experience in how that feels. So the reason why the company exists at all, I mean, I'm applying this specifically to Wistia, but I think it works in a lot of places. The reason why the company exists or is successful is because there was a group of people who had no managers and loved to do things that customers also really liked. And so you've gotten to this point because of people who took action. And now you're asking those people who always took the action to step back and be in more of a mentoring, a leadership, a shepherding role. And that's really hard because, you know, you're still in that solutions execution mindset. And I just think it's important to note that what Ed was kind of getting at, and I think we'll talk a little bit about this in the second section of the podcast tonight, is you're not saying, hey, like, manager, you no longer have an opinion, you no longer have input, you no longer have a say. It's like turn over ownership in its entirety to this other group, and you become a participating member, but the call is theirs to make. And if they're going to do a good job of it, they're going to ask for your input and you know, your experience and your feedback afterwards. Like, all that is built into your process, but ultimately the call is theirs to make.
Chase, over at Automatic, you know, a little bit bigger company, probably has a couple of more managers than any of the rest of us do. What's it like there? How do the managers there kind of help you do your best work rather than constraining you?
Yeah, so I guess we are a little bit different in that we call them team leads. I guess they're not what I would call traditional managers, in that they're not, there's not like a pay raise or anything like that involved with being a team lead. So, title wise and, you know, salary wise, that kind of thing, you're still just the same as any of the colleagues that you're working with. But essentially the team lead is there, you know, just to represent the entire team that they're working with for the company, whether it be, you know, if they made a mistake, sort of taking the brunt of the feedback on that or whatever the case may be, or just, you know, advocating for that team and the work they're doing for the rest of the company, along with, you know, some mentoring definitely and coaching and that kind of thing with the team members. But in general, yeah, it's more of a, an admin and just sort of keeping things organized kind of role, more so than a manager, I'm your boss type of experience. And so that, you know, plays out through most of the teams at Automatic. And then obviously we do have, you know, Matt, our CEO, and a few other folks on his, we call it the bridge team, that are sort of bridging the different sections of Automatic. And so they definitely do function more as, maybe not typical managers, but more as managers of, you know, all the various teams and that kind of thing. So we have Andrew Spittle, who is sort of the director of our, you know, happiness teams. And then we have, you know, a design director and John Maida and that kind of thing. So, you know, lots of folks there that are sort of taking on that role as a, you know, for the broad, you know, groups of teams in the company.
Yeah, I know. So for us here at Basecamp, kind of similar, we don't really have quote unquote managers. It's more leads, which I mean, might be just a fancy way of saying it's a manager rather than all the stigma with it. But one of the things that has kind of really been influential with our company, and this is one of those that we're going to get to once we read this book, was the book Turn the Ship Around. And in that, there was a really great article that Jason wrote. I'll find it. I've got it. I'll make sure to share it in the show notes and all that. But basically, Jason was talking about how that you don't have to ask for permission to do something from him. You've got to come with intent. And there's a difference there. When you ask for permission, it's almost like you're going to your manager, your team leader, whatever, and when you ask for permission, if something goes wrong, it's like, well, maybe they should have told me not to do it. You know, it kind of puts the responsibility back on them rather than on you. Whereas if you come with intent and, you know, you say, I'm going to do X, Y, or Z, that puts the responsibility back on you, the person that's going to carry out the action. Jason had a really good line in here that I kind of want to quote so that everybody has it. Don't ask me if you can do this or that. Tell me what you're going to do so I can cheer you on, help you out, ask a question, suggest another approach that may be worth considering. But if it won't happen unless I say so, I won't say so. And that, I think the biggest thing for us, and like I said, we'll probably get to this more when we talk about that book, but I think it kind of has parallels here. Again, the manager, the team leader, whatever, is creating the space for you to do work. They're not setting up dependencies that you have to rely on to get the work, to make the work happen. With dependencies, there's all sorts of stuff that can break down. But, you know, if you create this space of, you know, if you have an idea and you want to run with it and your manager say, yeah, run with it, that's great. That kind of opens up a lot more flexibility and kind of makes things happen faster than the other way around. I'll put that link in the show notes and all that, but that just made me think of it when Chase was talking about that with Automatic. One of the kind of the cool things here, and again, so this is a quote from Ed back from the book that was really kind of the crux for me. And I think it was for, I think Jeff mentioned it. Anyway, he said, unleashing creativity requires that we loosen the controls, accept risk, trust our colleagues, work to clear the path for them, and pay attention to everything that creates fear. Doing all these things won't necessarily make the job of managing a creative culture easier, but ease isn't the goal. Excellence is. So, Jeff, what's some of the things that you're doing at Wistia to kind of, as Ed puts it, like clear the path for other people around you to do their best work?
Yeah, I love that line. That's a great line. That is a really tough question.
It was like I was setting up that ball for you to just knock it out of the park.
I think one of the most important pieces of that is setting out what's the priority of the business, or what's the most important things, what's the key values of what success looks like in the business. Because for Pixar, for example, I think it's some, you know, to a certain extent, it's, hey, we want to make sure that our movies perform and all of that kind of stuff. But really, it's about the art of the story. Like, are you telling a really, really incredible story in a unique way that connects with our audience. And if you don't have that as a creative creative problem solver, you don't really have like a solid anchor. You don't have that check when, you know, it's late at night and you're still thinking about it and you're like, would this be a fit for what we're doing? Like, it's hard to know. So I think that's really, really incredibly important, that piece. Then the second thing is setting up consistent checkpoints so that people can show their work in a safe space. Mm-hmm. A lot of organizations that I don't think do a good job of this encourage people to come with a finished draft, like show me when it's done. And so people who don't really know what done is or have too many open questions to even know whether they're on the right path, they toil for forever. And at WSSI, we try to, and we actually have built into our process things like weekly demo and design reviews, so that even if stuff is in the early stages or there's still a lot of open questions, or you're only at the step where you have mock-ups that were done with a Sharpie and there's no detail at all, that's a really good place to check in and get some of that input from stakeholders that you wouldn't get until later. I think that's not everything at all. I think we could have an entire hour-long show about just that step, just the step of kind of dispelling fear and how management can do that. But I think that working in a deer process is really important.
Yeah, that review there is really interesting because so Pixar does something similar. They call it a brain trust. Basically, every now and then they will – well, I won't say every now and then. It's a pretty frequent process. I don't think he mentioned if it was like weekly or monthly or whatever, but it was definitely – I remember it being frequent, or the word frequent used. Anyways, they bring in basically this group of other experienced storytellers to review – where the movie is at, where the project is at currently. So they'll hear from the director. They might highlight some of the different parts that are kind of weaker, or maybe they talk about the things that are stronger. Basically, it's there just to give everybody a chance to look at the project, look at the movie, and kind of offer these checkpoints, like you mentioned. That's a good way of looking at it. The big thing there was there wasn't any like formal power entrusted to this group of people. Like the director still got to make the final call. He was always the boss. You know, he was always there and she was there always to make that final decision. But the big thing was that this review was there as a check, as a place for making sure that the risks that were being taken were, you know, good risks, that the ideas that they were working through were good ideas. Basically, it was just a place to be honest about all of it. So I really like that idea. I like that it happened early and often, like you mentioned. I think we mentioned in the last episode, like we kind of get stuck in this. I have an idea and I'm going to take it almost all the way to the end, and then like you're stuck with this idea, and if it doesn't work, then you kind of like wrap yourself up like you own that idea, the idea of the ugly baby. Yeah, the ugly baby, that's what it was in the last episode. Livingston, is there, you know, we talk about kind of these different checks and reviews and things like that, and automatic, what, you know, again, kind of a bigger company here. What are the team leads there doing to kind of clear things out so that you can do some of your best work?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think a lot of the work that the team leads do, at least in my experience, is they work on like setting goals for the teams and things like that. I mean, obviously with our input and that kind of thing, but they sort of lead the way and doing those kinds of things, setting goals. They, you know, lead the way in making sure that we have all the tools and the information, things like that, that we need. So if there's something that, you know, some communication breaking down between, you know, our team and another team that we need to be working closely with or something like that, they're sort of the liaisons to work that out. You know, just sort of a point person, I guess, and an advocate for our team, for the rest of the company, to make sure that, you know, there's no blockers for us to do the best work that we can do, and ultimately to do our best job helping users and making those users as happy as we can. And, you know, and if there's an issue, then that would be the person who would try to resolve that, you know, however that needs to happen.
Yeah, I think so. Doesn't Automattic call them people wranglers or something in there somewhere? I don't know. I thought it was there that I heard the term.
Yeah, we have, so we have like HR wranglers. I don't know if we have, maybe they used to call them people wranglers. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I forget where I heard the term from, but I thought it was a really great kind of encapsulation of some of the things that, that managers and team leads do, whether it's, you know, checking on career progress, you know, with one-on-ones and that kind of thing, even down to like little stuff, like handling the schedule, making sure all the bases are covered and you've got, you know, coverage for whatever you're doing, that gives you space and your team space to, you know, work on other things and all that. So Jeff, I want to go back just a little bit. You mentioned we could do a whole episode. So not a whole episode, but a little mini episode maybe about that fear. When we talk about, you know, creating that space and trusting your employees, there is fear that's built into that. Just because if you're not used to that, it can kind of be a little intimidating, especially when you work on things kind of outside of your normal wheelhouse, for instance. Whether it's, you know, maybe you so far have handled like reactive customer stuff, whether it's answering emails or live chats or stuff like that. Now you're moving more into like proactive, you know, reaching out to customers before things happen kind of stuff, whatever it is. If it's out of your wheelhouse, then there's going to be all sorts of fear that comes with that. So how do you handle that? Like if somebody on your team takes on a new project, do you like acknowledge the fear up front and kind of talk about it? Or is it just kind of, you know, maybe you bring that up down the road kind of thing?
I've tried to get better at acknowledging it up front. I won't say that I do or I don't, but I've tried to get better because, you know, I was one of those people that didn't feel that fear. Like in a small company, you don't feel that fear because you're asked to do that every day. Yeah. That's just kind of part of your job. But now we have people joining the company that don't have to do that, or they are sort of faced with this like quote unquote massive success of what we've done, and they're worried about screwing it up, right? That's kind of like where the fear comes in. And so it can be really helpful to say, I know that this is right. I know this is different. I know this is going to be tough. I know this is going to go slow at first and then it's going to get better and better. Or I know you don't have any experience in this. Like maybe we could have somebody who does sit in with you on a few or something like that. I think it's just helpful as the manager or lead or whatever you want to call it, to start the conversation, to open that door and say, hey, I know that there's like some parts of this that probably feel a little risky. But I have a lot of confidence in you that you can do it because of this and this. And here's what I'm expecting. And you kind of open the door for them to say, yeah, I got to tell you, like, I feel super unprepared for this. Or, you know, I don't know, that something specific about the project they're about to take on, which, you know, gives you the opportunity to say, hey, that's no big deal. Like, we can do a dry run right now, or we could, something that people get hung up on all the time is they answer tickets. Like, someone will write in and they'll write them a response. But if it came to writing someone a message, say in like a more proactive tool like Intercom, for example, something that's going to be seen by people that they don't know their name or situation, people get really nervous about that. That's a very big change. And that's the kind of thing that can be managed by just saying, hey, why don't we just ask somebody? Why don't we just send a message right now to one person and see if they respond? And you get over the, you know, you get over that feeling that it's a really scary thing. That's just a specific example of something that comes to mind when you're talking about that. I think that the even bigger fear for us most of the time is on the other side, around giving up decision control, giving up detail control. That comes with a lot of fear as well, because, you know, I mean, that's how I built my version of myself in my brain, is that I do that. I'm the person that makes that decision, and now you're going to be the person who makes that decision. What do I do? And it's just, it becomes incredibly important to have managers and leaders who create the space for you to give up those. I think the the article I remember is Give Up Your Legos. That was a first round review article, Give Up Your Legos. That was really good on this.
Yeah, I think for me, it's always, sorry, I was looking, Give Away Your Legos. That's what it was.
Oh, okay.
Because I remember reading that one too, and I was like, that was a good one. Again, I'll make sure that ends up in the show notes so that everybody can check it out and read it. So for me, I think the fear is always like, what am I missing out on that I shouldn't be missing? Because it's easy to be afraid of things that, you know, you already know about. If using that example, you know, putting that message out for a customer that you don't know who they are, really, you don't haven't ever talked to them before. Like, yeah, that can be a little intimidating, but once you've done it for a while, like, yeah, that's second nature. You know, it's no big deal. For me, it's always, you know, once I think through something or pitch an idea or suggest something or whatever it is, it's like, what am I missing? What should I know that I have no idea that I should know? Because it's hard to know what you don't know. And that's probably my like limit of the word no for the day. But that's the big thing. It's, you know, there's always going to be something that you miss and we all have to be okay with that. So I was working on a pitch for some new marketing stuff, a couple of weeks ago with one of my colleagues. We put together what I thought was a pretty good pitch, had all the bases covered or what I thought were all the bases. We had reviewed it a couple of times and even, you know, asked somebody else to look at it. Everything was looking good. Then we sent it up to Jason and Jason read through it. And he was like, well, what about this? And I was like, damn it. Like, very first line, like I forgot to address X out of all of this. Now, luckily, like, you know, I worked for a great team and that's not a big deal. You go back and you answer the question and you keep going. But I can definitely empathize with people who, like, it's more of a, here's a formal idea. And then all of a sudden one person asks a question and the whole thing is shot out from under you. And you feel like, again, you feel like you, this baby that you've been caring for and taking care of is completely gone all of a sudden.
Related to that, and I found myself doing it, is I am a very I can be a real detail-oriented perfectionist. Mm-hmm. And so like wording, for example, is very important to me. And if somebody is taking on a new project and they write the proposal or they write their notes up for what they would like to do, I can find myself copy editing for them or saying like, I don't understand what this means, way down in the weeds. When really, like, they've layered on a lot of stuff to show that they're serious about this and to show that they've really thought it through. And really, I should be stepping back and saying, this thing broadly, like, does this make sense? Is this a really good thing for us to spend our time on? And that's really where I should, as a team lead, that's where I should be playing the most. When we get to the step of, like, where that detail matters, like, that'll come up again. That's part of, like, being having a really good communication network set up with your team is like, you know, the big details, like those will get discussed again. Like those will get brought up again. I don't have to address it right now, but what I should be trying to create for someone is a sense of momentum, because that dispels fear pretty quickly when you feel like, you know, you're getting some buy-in and people are really excited about your idea. I like what Jason says in his post where he, and you already repeated it, where he says like, if you tell me what you want to do and you've thought through it a little bit and it makes sense for the business, I'm going to be the biggest cheerleader for you.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be trying to take it away from you or pretend like it was my idea. I'm going to be your biggest cheerleader. But you do have to come with some of those details thought through. I'm not going to hand that to you.
Yeah, you got to come with that intent, like he was talking about. And even to bring it back, you know, we talk about how Ed looks at managers as a clearing the path for those that they're working with, right? That's our job, to go through, and it doesn't have to be a perfect path. You don't have to pick out every single little piece of pebble or twig or whatnot. Like, you don't have to get buried in those details. It's your job just to, like, push the big trees out of the way, push the big rocks out of the way, like, give your team space to, well, as you put it, get that momentum going. Because once that momentum is going, it's a good thing. Chase, what's it with Automatic there? How do you bring up that kind of fear aspect with your different team leads? Like, what's the best way, if I'm going to talk with a manager and say, you know, I've got this fear, like, how do I bring that up?
I think probably the best way to do it, most all teams I've been on, I think most teams have regular, you know, like one-on-one chats with team leads. That's one of the big things that we do. And so that would probably be obviously a great place to bring something like that up. And that's, you know, the avenue I've used to bring things up in the past. And I know Anne, my team lead, is great about just sort of being available anytime anyone, you know, needs to chat about something or wants to chat about something if it's, you know, seems to be like a more urgent matter. But I think, you know, across the company, that's generally pretty true. So, you know, communication is always available for that kind of thing, which is really great and something that I am super, you know, happy about with Automatic.
Nice. All right. So we're running up against the our time limit here. Anything else y'all want to throw in as far as the this book goes? Because we're moving on to another one next week. So, Livingston, I'll give you the first. Anything else you want to throw in?
I think we pretty well covered it.
Awesome. Jeff, last parting thoughts?
I say go read the book. For anybody who didn't, I say go read the book. I've now read it once and listened to it once. And I found it, yeah, I think it's absolutely profound. I think it's really, really cool to think about such a successful company with such a distributed ownership model. They clearly have a lot of leaders in there, and I think we're going to get into leaders who turn the ship around. So good choice. Good choice, whoever recommended this.
Yeah, I forget who recommended it. I'll have to look that up and give you props for it. Yeah, so that's our take on this one. Go out and read the book. That's probably the best thing you can do on this one. I think we mentioned it last week. It's kind of a slog at times. Push through it. You'll be fine. Just keep going because there's some really great things in there. But yeah, that's it. That's it for this one. Let us know what you thought. Hit us up, supportops.co. You can find us on Twitter. We're at SupportOps there. Talking about next episode. So we've got two other books that we're going to be talking about before we wrap up things and take the holiday break. Of those, the one for next time is going to be Hug Your Haters, How to Embrace Complaints and Keep Your Customers by Jay Baer. Is that how you pronounce it? B-A-E-R. I should have prepared for this one because I learned how to like pronounce Ed Catmull's name by watching a couple of videos and just did not prepare for this one. So yeah, Jay Baer, B-A-E-R, Hug Your Haters. Make sure if you haven't read that one to grab it before we start talking about it next week. And then after that, we're looking at Turn the Ship Around it's David Marquette. So make sure, again, if you haven't read those, to get those. That's what we're going to be ending the rest of the year with. But yeah, so that's it. Thanks again for listening, and until we see you again next time.